This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. Spring Valley's biggest conversation, Talk Back on the Evening Edition, only on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. It is the Evening Edition. It is Talk Back. You're on with Caroline and Uma. Now, in 2010, the Economic Transformation Programme was formulated as an essential part in elevating Malaysia to developed nation status by 2020. The idea was this: a larger GNI per capita, US 15,000, US 444 billion in investments, 3.3 million new jobs.
So, 4 years on, and a lot has changed. In 2012, Malaysia was 18th in the World Bank's Doing Business report. Today, we're at number 6. We're also now ranked number 12 in the IMD World Competitiveness Yearbook 2014, and realized investments are now up to 264.6 billion ringgit, with 61% of that being from private investments.
So today on Talkback Thursday, we're pondering the following. The country is becoming wealthier, and there's change taking place. But are you satisfied with the economic direction of the country? Are you feeling this difference? Is it enough? And we have a very special guest who will be here to take your questions and concerns. We have Dato' Sri Idris Jalla, CEO of Pemandu. Sir, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Today's Talkback, of course, is brought to you by the Economic Transformation Programme. So, folks, remember that number to call is 0377109000. You can text us on 0162019000. You can tweet your questions at BFM Radio. We're asking Dato' Sri Idris about the economic direction of the country, and we're asking you whether you're satisfied with the economic direction of the country.
All right, let's start with asking you, Dato' Sri. Are you satisfied or optimistic about the economic direction of the country?
I am satisfied, but we have a lot of work still to do.
Okay, you know, there's so much progress. We were throwing out the numbers a little earlier. I'm sure you know them by heart. So a lot of progress being made, but you know, a lot of the time from the talkbacks that we conduct and the calls that we receive, it feels as though it hasn't filtered down to the man on the street. Why do you think there is this disconnect?
I think the point was this: when we started this work, we were quite clear that we had to be specific about our market segment. So one area was we wanted to make rural infrastructure a key priority under the GTP. So it meant that we built a lot of rural roads, and we gave a lot of water to local people, rural people, and then electricity. We counted the number of people that benefited from it directly. That is 5.1 million people. But, you know, that's only 5.1 million people. Not all the 29 million people use those rural roads. So if you ask the 5.1 million people, did this materially impact them? The answer is yes. And you take a look at what's happening in Klang Valley, for example, Caroline. We were absolutely concerned that people were not happy with urban public transport at the time in 2010, and a lot of them complain about KTM trains being late and overcrowded.
Yes.
And so what we done was we brought in a lot more new trains, 38 more new trains. We brought in new buses. We revamped Pudu Raya and did all this. But really, Caroline, the numbers of people that use urban public transport every day in the morning peak in Kuala Lumpur is 460,000. That's not 6 million people.
No.
So if you ask the 6 million people living in Klang Valley, they don't use that. Of course, they don't feel it. But if you ask the 460,000 people that use the KTM train, they know it's a big difference today. Just two very simple examples. So we were very clear, but those were the priorities because they were the pain points. So we made the program to deal specifically with those issues. And so obviously I can understand how come the remaining people don't feel it?
And they're all calling us.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. All right. So it's a demographic. You know,
it is a demographic issue as well. I mean, that's exactly what we want to know. Call us and ask your questions to Dato' Sri Idris Jalla. We're asking you, are you feeling the change, the economic direction of the country? We seem to have moved up in rankings. Are you feeling that change? If so, yes. If not, why not? 0377109000 is the number to call. You can text us on 0162019000. You can tweet us, as always, at BFM Radio. Dato' Sri, there, I guess, as you mentioned, a lot of efforts were targeted towards the extremely poor, uplifting the extremely poor, eradicating extreme poverty.
Right.
Is that working? It's been 4 years.
Yeah. We have gotten the statistics suggest 188,000 people, we know them by name, actually have graduated out from poverty. And so that's one. So that's the ones we've really targeted. And the very simple thing that we did is the minimum wage implementation. When we did that, that is one simple reform that got something like 3.2 million people out from the poverty line. And that's actually highly impactful in the way we've done that. So that is one thing. There's a study done by the Asian Development Bank, and they looked at the work that various governments have done over the last 4 years. According to that survey, Malaysia has made the biggest progress so far in eradication of poverty. The data that the Asian Development Bank put forward was our improvement was more than 53%.
In how many years?
4 years.
Wow.
The improvement. The reverse, actually, according to the data, reverse has happened for Thailand. Thailand has worsened their position by nearly 50% over the same period of time.
Right.
In Indonesia, Vietnam, and other places, they have improved their position by a little less than 10%. Perhaps a couple of others were 12%. But nonetheless, that report is quite revealing because a lot of what we were doing was trying very hard to deal with issues around low-income household. And that was, in our definition, that constitute people who whose incomes were in the bottom 40%. Then if I step back and ask the question...
Is there a hard number for that? So the, below how many ringgit a month? Is there a hard number? Or
well, the number that I think... I don't have the number straight offhand today. I think it was around 4,000.
Okay.
Right. And that's why we pegged the bring around something close to 4,000, 3,000 thereabout. And the reality for us is the following. If you ask me the question, have we resolved, dealt with the problem fully? Answer no. We still got a long way to go by way of improving the position of the low-income household. And then some of the latest numbers that we have is that the household survey suggests that the median income for the bottom 40% is improved by something more than 8.7%. The mean income for the bottom 40% is improved by 8.7%.
Right.
And so whether you take the median or whether you take the mean, it has grown by more than 8%, considering that inflation is running at a little less than 3%. So there is indeed an increase in the disposable income of those people in the bottom 40%.
All right, number to call, 03-7710, call 7710-9000. Call us with your questions for Dr. Sri Idris Jala. We have Christopher on the line.
Hi.
Hi, Christopher. So, tell us, Christopher, are you satisfied with the economic direction of the country, or do you feel it?
I don't feel it, and I want to know when can I feel it, or when can the 100% feel it.
All right, so yeah, we did say this a little earlier. That was being targeted. So when will 100% of Malaysians feel it?
Christopher, thanks for raising that. Did you get a new job in the last year?
No, I'm a self-employed, and then I can't.
Okay.
Up and down.
Actually, over the last 4 years, we have created altogether in our economy 1.6 million new jobs. And those jobs that were created, the survey suggests that the salaries were higher than the ones that are before in terms of the average salaries. So I would say that those people who got those 1.6 million jobs, they would actually feel it. But of course, Christopher, the reality is if you ask the guy who got the job, he wouldn't know it's due to the ETP. I can tell you that it's a project that came under the Economic Transformation Program. They wouldn't say I have benefited from it because of the ETP. But the reality is 1.6 more million new jobs has been derived. And for those people who don't use the urban public transport, obviously you don't feel it, because we were targeting that as the pain point within Klang Valley. That, Christopher, our view today...
Public transport, we can feel it because... Our guys came on time, you know, et cetera.
Very good.
The one the public can feel it, even those who don't use the service.
Uh-huh.
But economically, because cost increases faster than, you know, our income. So has the EDP actually helped to reduce the cost?
Our data, Christopher, suggests that inflation is less than 3%. Average salaries of everyone... average, either you take the median or the mean, that is increased by more than 8%. So disposable income has increased relative to cost of living.
Okay.
But of course, if you take anecdotally, Christopher, I'm sure there are people that says, I didn't get a merit increase over the last year or so, and cost of living, the price of nasi lemak has seemed to have gone higher. I think anecdotally, are people that will have those.
Okay, since we're talking about nasi lemak, I'm talking about 1990, at Subang Airport, we can get 30 cents nasi lemak.
Uh-huh.
Now, $3, you can't even get a decent nasi lemak like as what we get at 30 cents.
I think there are only certain things that we can hold that industry accountable to. The price of nasi lemak in airports specifically might be a little bit tough. There's a question in from a BFM listener texted this saying, with recent crude oil prices dropping and removal of fuel subsidies, what are the contingency plans to sustain the economy when the price of crude oil increases again? Will subsidies come back?
We have clearly moved for the RON 95 and diesel, we moved it to a managed float.
That's right.
What it means is that if oil price keep coming down, you'll expect a further reduction in the price of pump price for RON 95 and diesel and also 97 in January and February. But if it does come up, then obviously we'll have to increase it according to the market price. So we move towards that. And so the indications today is if you look at projections, the most of the conventional wisdom in the world with regards to oil prices, most people expect oil price to be in the doldrums rather over the next three years or so.
All right. The number to call, 0377-109-000. We've got Dato' Sri Idris Jala with us, and he's taking your questions on the state of the Malaysian economy. We're asking you if you're satisfied with the direction of the Malaysian economy, if you've been feeling the change that the ETP has brought over the last 4 years.
There's that, and have you noticed the price of nasi lemak from 30 cents?
From 30 cents to now, even 3 ringgit, you cannot get good nasi lemak. That was according to Christopher. Yeah. 0377-109-000. Folks, keep those calls coming in. We'll be right back after these messages. BFM 89.9. Heard the man. 0377-109-000 is the number to call. You're listening to the Evening Edition. Talk Back Thursday with Caroline and Uma. We have with us Dato' Sri Idris Jala, the CEO of Pomandu. He is taking your questions on the state of the economy, the economic direction of the country. We're asking you if you're satisfied with that. We're asking if you are one of those people feeling the difference. We've got Syed on the line. Hi, Syed. What do you say?
Hello.
Hi, Syed. You're on.
Hi. Thank you for this opportunity. Hi, Dr. Sri Tanjala.
Hello.
Hi. Basically, based on my understanding, is that Malaysia is going to face some difficulties next year with the currency weaknesses, oil price coming down, less revenue for the country. So one way to grow the country is to boost more government spending. So what do you have to say, Dr. Sri?
You know, Syed, thanks for raising that question. I work in Shell for 23 years. You know, when I was there, I left Shell in December 2005. The whole time I was in Shell, our group view about the forecast for oil price was less than 20. And so, you know...
You mean 20 US
20
barrel?
US dollars a barrel.
Right,
you know,
wow.
I have been... I've seen the world when oil price was even at 10 US dollars per barrel. When I was in Shell Group, based in London, we felt that the world couldn't handle a price of oil above $80 a barrel. There will be recession all around. It will be anti-growth. But, you know, the interesting point was when oil went up to 80 and went to 100, the world economy is so resilient. There was adjustments to the economy, etc., globally. I think for me, for Malaysia next year, if you think about it, it's gone down, Brent has gone down to $69 a barrel in the last couple of days. We shouldn't panic when you think about it. You typically, for budget for next year, if you look at our budget, we had originally estimated for 2015, government oil and gas dividend that comes, say 27 billion ringgit. But inside the same budget, we expected to pay 11.8 billion ringgit for subsidy. Now, let's suppose the oil price let's say the dividend drops down to 20. But then we don't have to pay the 11.8 billion. So that means the net positive for us is plus 20. So if you do the maths, 27 billion ringgit of dividend minus 11, which is 16 billion. So let's suppose our total dividend drops to 20. Why I use 20 was even when oil price was at 40, Petronas was still able to give us 20 billion US dollars at even at 40 US dollars per barrel. That was the number that went on for quite a long time, at even at 30 US dollars per barrel. Even if you did it at 20, then we don't have to pay, if you like, any more money for a subsidy. So if you do the math, 20 minus zero is 20, la. Net positive 20. Now, of course, there's concern about the depreciation in our ringgit, weakening of the ringgit. But again, if you sell our natural gas and also our oil products of our oil abroad, we get currency, U.S. currency. When you revert that back into to ringgit, it in fact helps to mitigate the oil price effect by about a third just by that conversion. So you look at it, there are positive aspects of it. I would say today most of the sectors that use oil and gas as an input to production, it will reduce their costs very significantly. My point today is that we shouldn't panic when you look at this, but it means that we have to be able to look at it with a cool towel on the head and figure out how to deal with it moving forward. But rest assured that the Prime Minister and the Fiscal Committee and the Governor of the Central Bank, they meet very regularly to monitor the situation.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Syed, for that question. Now you've got a lot of math to work out. We've got Raymond on the line. Hey, Raymond, what do you say?
Good afternoon.
Good evening, yeah.
Yes, my name is Raymond Chong, calling from KL.
Yes, Raymond.
That's right. Okay, since the government has implemented this economic transformation programs in order to achieve by 2020 high income nation. But I wonder, by looking at the figure, that our one of these indicator is our household debt as a percentage of our GDP.
That's right.
It's keep increasing year by year. Okay? So it's almost reaching 85% as a percentage of the GDP, and it's considered one of the highest in Asia. So I wonder what this figure telling us that we can achieve high income by 2020. Mm. And second is that our Prime Minister keep saying that our cost of living still low, yes, comparatively to other Asian countries like Singapore or Hong Kong,
right,
or Taiwan and Korea. But looking at our income per capita, we are far below them. That's one of the reasons that you look in, we are so many households receiving PRIM every year, and the PRIM amount is keep increasing. That's why I don't understand how the government can achieve high nation by 2020.
Well, thank you very much, Raymond.
All right, so we'll start with
big, heavy questions for you.
Household debt ratio to GDP, yes.
Okay, I mean, thanks, Raymond, for raising that issue. It just reminded me, a month ago, I was in New York. I met the CEO of Fitch Rating, because they were rather lukewarm about Malaysia. And this was a question that he raised with me. He said, he asked me, Idris, are you concerned as a government that the household debt is about 87% of GDP? And, you know, he said, we have the same problem when we were in the U.S., the subprime. And this was the cause of a lot of the difficulties we had a few years ago. And I told him that, look, you can't just look at just the household debt. You must look alongside it, household asset. The interesting thing for Malaysia is that our household asset as a percentage of GDP is 332% of the GDP. It simply means that when you borrow money and if you have the asset to back it, it's actually okay. Our savings and our property that we hold, and that's very significant. So to me, equating the problem that we have here by looking at just the household debt without looking at the household asset is a parsimony. And that was the problem that I mentioned in the U.S. Their household debt was so high, but it was not backed by the household assets. That said, I do agree with you, Raymond. We do need to be concerned about the rising percentage. So no way I'm saying that 87% is a good number. I think we should lower that. We should encourage people to live within their means, not overborrow. That's why there are some measures taken by Bank Negara to to soften a lot of the borrowing by way of housing. So that's the first point I need to deal with. The second one I want to mention is the issue around cost of living. As you know, under our NKRA for what's called low-income household, we are with you, Raymond. We know this is a challenge for us. The bottom 40% of our folks, we really need to do a lot more in terms of improving them out. In the first year, we had 54,000 people who were living below poverty line. They didn't have enough food to eat. There were Chinese, Malays, and Indian, and Dayaks, etc. And we reached out to every single one of them. Even those that are in the vulnerable poor category, we did so to get them out. I had mentioned earlier on that we introduced a minimum wage to lift them out from poverty. I am not saying here, Raymond, with any apology, that I'm not saying that we solved the problem. We have a long way to go in dealing with this. But rest assured, Raymond, it's on top of the agenda. But the trick for me is long-term, the solution for absolute poverty or relative poverty, in my mind, is education. The more we progress as a country by giving people high-quality education, that is the long-term solutions to poverty.
All right, so putting things in perspective there. You know, we've covered quite a few things, from 30 cents nasi lemak to $100 barrels of oil.
Exactly, all the way to household income and also
GDP, cost of living.
Cost of living.
Yes.
But there's lots more to cover because we're talking about the state of the economy. With Dr. Sri Idris Jala, we're taking all of your questions as well. The number to call, 03-771-09000. You can text us on 016-201-9000. Naja and Mr. Lim, if you could just hold the line, we will be with you right after the news. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to BFM 89.9.
It's Talkback time on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. You're on with Caroline and Uma. It is indeed talk back time. 03-771-09000 is the number to call. 016-201-9000. You can text us your questions or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. We're talking about the economic direction of the country. We're asking you if you're satisfied. Are you feeling the difference brought about by the Economic Transformation Program? The reason we've got with us Dato Sri Idris Jala, CEO of Pomandu. He is taking all of your questions and we've covered a lot of ground from the price of nasi lemak all the way to crude oil. So keep those questions coming. We've got Naja on the line. Thank you so much for waiting, Naja. What say you?
Hello. Hi. Hello. Hi. Hi, everyone. So it was an honor to talk to you, Dato. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. You okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. Thanks. Very well. So I think I have two questions here. Probably the first one, I just echoed the first caller, Raymond. So it's like, you know, the reality and hard truth of the people outskirts in the suburb, like where I come from. Mm. I mean, like, the wages can be as low as below 500 or making like 50 ringgit a day. So when you saying about the minimum wages that we are driving, do you think this can be, you can see the impact in these good five years? Or how does it work to all this outskirts or a small town gathering in Malaysia then?
Right.
And yeah.
And your second question?
And then my second question is, all right, I think like Malaysian is doing very well in bringing the low class to the middle class. Like, you know, you can see the Gen Y now is getting a better job, better pay and stuff like that. But comparing to my parents' era, like 30 years ago, I think probably what they earned for a middle class can have a good life during that time. But for us, like making 100k per annum or 50k per annum, it doesn't mean that much if comparing to all this cost of living, the rising of everything. So yeah, probably you can comment in both ways, like low income and the middle class.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Naja.
Yeah, let me begin by saying that, Naja, thanks for raising that. What we're doing on minimum wage, the experience we've said, as I said earlier on, 3.2 million people, we got them out from poverty line. The study that we did was, what is the poverty line that we have in Malaysia? And we reckon, based on that study, is 900 ringgit is the poverty line. And now that we have implemented that, made it mandatory, any employee who is not paid the minimum wage can file a complaint to the Ministry of labor today. So far, in since we began this process, there's only 114 people that have filed a complaint that they haven't been paid the minimum wage. So anyone who is listening on to this today, if you do not get paid the minimum 900 ringgit, if you like, you can file a complaint and be included, and then we will take that forward. And some of the surveys that were done, the Ministry of Labor, they inspect factories and go down to the ground. Something like 4,000 inspections were done. And of the ones that they inspected, 97% of the companies that were inspected complied fully with the minimum wage. So I would say today that we are very pleased with that so far. More generally, Nazar, your questions that you raised before is how do we make sure that the disposable income of the average Malaysian, whether it's the low class or the middle class, rises to be higher than the cost of living. That obviously is your concerns is valid. When we stood and looked at the GDP in 2009, we put that on the pedestal as one of the national key challenges. Now, Malaysia's approach is always that we want to generate income. We want to generate more jobs. As I said before, over the last 4 years, 1.6 million jobs were created. And 1.4 million of those jobs are within the NKEAs. The average salaries of those people who took on those jobs were higher. But, you know, we have 29 million Malaysians. So if you create 1.6 million jobs, that's actually not a bad outcome for a four-year period. But I granted that not everyone are able to take on those higher jobs. There are still those that are in the rural places. My tribe, the Kelabit, for example, we're still relatively poor in my village. We still don't have electricity in my own village. And under the rural infrastructure program, by the end of this year, they should have rural electrification. So that is, I think people will celebrate Christmas much better in my village.
They can light up the tree this year.
They can light up the tree and possibly. So that's really good. But I do believe that net, at the end of the day, the real solution for relative poverty and absolute poverty has to be on education. And I am a real proponent for us to do the best we can to improve the quality of education. So if you have one or two kids coming out from that family that will do well and get steady income, and that's will lift the entire family out from poverty. That has happened in my own tribe. I've seen it happen amongst the Kelabit people, some of the Dayak folks, the Bidayuh people. And you can see that happening amongst the Malays too. Rural Malay has been transformed because many of them have then gotten much better education, much better pay and higher pay too. So generally speaking, I understand the concern. It's just a challenge for us. It's work in progress.
Naja, does that answer all of your questions?
To have some comments, you know, I echo what you say on the education. It's like a long way to go on the education because, you said, for people who's paying below under wages of 500, obviously they don't listen to all this English channel or station.
True.
So it's you know what I mean? It's so hard to get them there to where we want them to be. And I was looking at all this middle class where they graduate from overseas and stuff like that. Obviously, they have bring up their, you know, come out from the low class to low income to the middle class. But I think the education in Malaysia locally is really, really poor. We don't really help much to bring them I think the ideas and the mentality is the most important thing for them, to enlighten that, we need to improve our skills to have a better income. So I think that Pomandu is doing for that one.
Yeah, I think we have to agree with that completely, right? This mentality.
Totally agree.
Well, on that basis, Dato Sri, in your opinion, how do we get Malaysians to adapt the mindset of ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country?
I like that theme, actually. And I am really of the view that Malaysia, we have to start changing our minds in thinking beyond our own shores. If you think about South Korea, South Korea was much the same as Malaysia some 20 years ago. But they've actually moved further ahead in terms of prosperity of their nation. And if you start looking at what they did right, the South Koreans, a lot of the companies simply decided to manufacture products and services that were world beaters. That's how they could produce Samsungs and the Hyundais and all those. And essentially, that is what we really need. And even if you're a big company and if you're a small company, you can find a way how to get your product and services to be better and then conquer the world out there. You know, I always remind people, you know, one of my favorite examples is this this guy who has hydraulic beds. He's a medium-sized company. He has a factory in Serdang. He manufactures hydraulic bed, and he's selling them in 41 countries. And so it's pretty good. And when I went to his factory and his company, I discovered that it's a Chinaman company, but the CEO is a Mat Saleh. So I asked him, how come you have a Mat Saleh as the CEO? He said, you know, Idris, they believe him and not me. And the reason is I want to sell our hydraulic beds to Germany and to Sweden and other places. And if they believe him more than I do, I'll hire him to be able to do that. And so, you know, another company that is, you might find this a little bit funny, but a company called Carex, they're the biggest manufacturer of condom in the world. I mean, not many people know that. But clearly, you can see people can produce a product and service, and if it is compelling, the proposition is compelling, the quality is good, the price is good, the value for money is there, then the world is going to take it. So I think the list is very long. If I return back to the question about what do we need to do, it's changing the mindset. You have to take this on yourself. You know, the government cannot help you innovate. You have to, you and Malaysians, we all must innovate like the Koreans have done. That's the future of Malaysia.
Yeah, well, we've got to take a quick, a break for our messages, but we'll be right back. 0377109000 is the number to call. 0162019000. You can text us your questions, and you can tweet us, as always, at BFM Radio. We've got with us Dr. Sri Idris Jala. He's here to answer all of your questions on the state of the economy and the future of the Malaysian economy. Kumari and Wan, if you just hold the line, we'll be with you very, very shortly. Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Back on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. You're on with Caroline and Uma. The number to call, 0377109000. We're talking about the state of the Malaysian economy. We're asking you if you're satisfied with the direction, economic direction of the country, whether you're feeling the difference that's been brought about by the Economic Transformation Program over the last 4 years since its inception. To help you and help us answer those questions is Dato' Sri Idris Jala, the CEO of Pemandu. Today's show, of course, is brought to you by the Economic Transformation Program. We've got Kumari on the line. Kumari, thank you so much for waiting. What say you?
I'll say good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening. Dr. Sri, I do not have a question for you. I think a lot of people have a lot of questions for you. I just want to say thank you. Thank you for being you. Thank you for relating to a lot of us Malaysians. Thank you for being such a good and powerful thought leader to think about all of us. Because I just wanted to stop by and say thank you. That's all.
Thank you, Kumari.
You're very kind, Kumari. You make my day.
She's been waiting 15 minutes to say that as well. So thank you for waiting.
Thank you so much, Kumari. You make my day today.
He is definitely our rock star guest.
You know, I always tell people, be kind to people because all of us have our own battles. You know, however solid you think you have a face, at the end of the day, we all have our concern. We have our own private battles. So, you know, you give me some nice
motivation,
kind words today.
Right?
You know, I feel good today.
We've got Juan on the line. Let's see if Juan can continue that feeling good. So Juan, what's your question?
Hi, good evening.
Good evening, Juan. Thank you so much for waiting.
I'm half Sarawakian, by the way. I have many questions for you, but I think for the sake of time, I can only ask one. My question is that I've read a lot of economic reports which basically suggest that in Malaysia, the proportion of GDP goes to employers versus employees is that of a very much of a developing nation and not a developed one. I think it's about 40% to employees versus 60%
right.
to employers, where in the UK, it's the total opposite, and Singapore is the total opposite. So I was just wondering, what is Pemandu, the government, and other whatever agencies are doing to actually change this mindset to actually pay out more to the employees and give them a better life? And can you give specific examples of what they are doing today?
Thanks, Juan. That's a great question.
Thank you. Thank you, Juan. I'm glad that you raised it. And you're half Sarawakian, you must be good, lah. You are right in raising that as a concern. It was a concern that we had, but we didn't have any data to prove it. So Pemandu, together with Thailand Corp, we conducted a survey to ascertain whether there is the percentage of employee compensation, as percentage of the profit of the company, whether it is fair and whether it is, if you like, just in some distribution, and if you compare it to other countries. You're right in terms of that survey had showed clearly we are slightly behind some of the other more advanced countries. So what are we doing to create, first of all, an awareness amongst the employers that they should share more with their employees? The central argument is the following. I am of the view that we shouldn't be thinking about giving money to people as a fixed salary per se. I think we should increase the employee compensation on the variable side, linking it to pay, linking it to performance, linking pay to performance. And if you did so, it will rise, it will help to trigger increases in productivity. Our central argument with the employers is encouraging them to share a little bit more of the profits to their employees, but put them more in the form of linking them as variable pay to performance of the company. I can tell you, we had two very big sessions that we conducted over the last 2 months, chaired directly by the Prime Minister. He met all the top CEOs and the owners of the movers and shakers in the business, the big companies. He laid the statistics right in front of them, encouraging them. One of the things we do not want to do in government is we don't want to legislate this kind of thing, because Malaysia believes in employers taking the right decisions to pay people, but not government taking a sledgehammer to force this down their throat. And so we are working very hard to encourage them, make them aware of the data. And we have some comparison between sectors too, oil, gas versus oil, gas in Singapore, financial services compared to financial services in Singapore and other countries. And in most cases, we can see there's room for improvement in this area.
All right, we've got Ravinder on the line. Ravinder, what do you say?
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening, Dato Sri.
Good evening.
And my question is, more Malaysians are sending children to private schools and international schools. More Malaysians are using private hospitals, hiring own security for residents. All this should lead to less expenses for the government in terms of building schools, hospitals, and hiring the staff that is required. So the question is, I have difficulty understanding why is our Malaysian debt getting higher? And now also, you know, with a low petrol price oil prices, where it would most likely impact Petronas' income, you know, how does the future look for Malaysia? That's the first question. The second quick one is the issue on the fuel subsidy. You know, the argument is always that, you know, the rich shouldn't be getting a fuel subsidy. But on the other hand, the rich have bigger cars and pay much higher taxes. So, you know, does this argument really stand?
All right. Thank you, Ravinder. Thank you for your call.
Okay, first question about why is our debt rising? The good news is, Ravinder, is that we have a law in Malaysia, self-imposed limitation, that we do not increase our government debt to exceed 55% of our GDP. So we have put in that as a fiscal regime to make sure we do not exceed that. So, and to the question, how come it is where it is today? As you know, for the last more than 10 years, 15 years, we have been having a fiscal deficit. That means our total expenditure, including development and OPEX, it exceeds our revenue. So what the first thing we have to do in Malaysia is to try and cut that fiscal deficit. And for the last 4 years, we've been reducing that. When we started, it was around 6.6% fiscal deficit as a percentage of our GDP. We have now brought that down to now 3.9 as of last year. This year, we should bring it down to 3.5%. Now, what it means is this. By the year next year, we'll bring it down to 3. By the year 2020, you will then be in a surplus mode. It means that if you're in surplus, you will not need to borrow a lot of money for development expenditure. You can use the surplus revenue for quite a number of your development programs. Because we're in a fiscal deficit, all of our infrastructure work has to be financed through borrowing, and such as building roads and doing all sorts of things on infrastructure. So that is a big dampener on us. And the second thing that we haven't done in Malaysia is that we have not introduced GST so far. 143 countries have introduced GST. Mm-hmm. And if we did introduce GST, and if we did it at, say, ASEAN kind of a level, where most countries have implemented at 10%, I think we will be able to reduce our fiscal deficit. We'll get into a surplus mode almost right away. And then we will then be able to begin the process of reducing our debt. So that's good. And the second question you raise is about the questions about fuel subsidy, whether, you know, we are subsidizing more the rich and the poor. I would say today, Ravinder, the question is a moot point already now, because we have now gotten rid of the subsidy by floating fuel directly to market. So starting on the 1st of December, if you like, we've already moved down that path. So essentially, it's a moot point today. I'm pleased to say that we are absolutely clear in our mind that we have to think about the future of our country. If you look at the UK, their GST is already more than 20%.
That's right.
Even Tanzania, their GST is at 18%. And those countries are already still in fiscal deficit. And to my mind, we have not used the arsenal yet. That means we have not used the GST. And if we were to do it, I would say today very confidently, the fact that we've gotten subsidy out of the way, fuel subsidy that is, and if we introduce GST gradually until a much more sustainable level, I think the country fiscally is a very easy fix. 10% for me, GST over time, I'm not saying immediately, the fact to remove subsidy, I think we will be in a surplus mode in no time if you were to do it. Let me return to other parts of the subsidy point.
Dr. Sri, if you just hold that thought, we will come back to the subsidy points after the news. We're talking to Dr. Sri Idris Jala. The number to call, 03-771-09000. You can text us on 01620019000. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. After the news, we're going to be talking about the future, about sustainability and innovation and the role it plays in building Malaysia's future. You're listening to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9. We're on with Caroline and Uma. Those numbers again, 03-771-09000 is the number to call, 01620019000 is the number to text. You can tweet us as well at BFM Radio. And the question we're asking today on Talkback is whether you're satisfied with the economic direction of the country. Are you feeling the difference brought about by the Economic Transformation Program, which was initiated 4 years ago? To answer these questions, we have with us very special guest, Dr. Sri Idris Jala. He's the CEO of Pemandu. Today's Talkback, of course, is brought to you by the Economic Transformation Program. So, Dr. Sri, before we get to the phones, you were going to mention a second point on subsidies.
I think that's let's not go there.
The point was made.
I've forgotten the question already now.
All right. Well, I have a question for you, Dr. Sri, just before we go to the calls. We use the word, you know, kind of sustainability, innovation, inclusiveness. We use these words a lot in our daily discourse. We see it in the media all the time, right? Now, the ETP's goal is to get Malaysia as a high-income nation by 2020. What plans are there after that point? What happens when we hit 2020? What's next?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I'm concerned about it. And I have no doubt in my mind that we will get to our target by 2020. But the question was beyond. My hypothesis for Malaysia beyond that is that we have to really get the Malaysian companies to produce superior products and services that can win in the international market. That, I think, is the most sustainable way to push forward. If we rely entirely, rather predominantly, on the domestic market and use domestic consumption to fuel the economy, I think that will bring us right up to the doorstep of high income. But beyond that, then I think it's going to be tough. So if you look at some of the big companies in Scandinavia, they were able to move and progress beyond simply because they continued to innovate.
Because Scandinavian countries, of course, we're talking 6-7 million population.
Very small countries. And that's the way forward for small countries. Malaysia, we are a small country. We are 29 million people. By the year 2020, we have only 31 million people, still relatively small.
And we'll be Scandinavian by then.
Yes, well, we can only hope, right? Maybe without the 55% taxes. We've got Victor on the line. Hey, Victor, what do you say?
Hi, good evening.
Good evening, Victor. Hi there.
Okay, last week I took a taxi in Johor Bahru, and the taxi driver told me that actually we are so poor that we cannot even afford our own product. For example, the best of Malaysian durian go to Singapore. So the best of the vegetable go there too. And the best of our timber go to Japan. So I think the foreign exchange rate don't lie. I mean, no matter how we say our economy is progressing well, but you cannot get away with the hard figure, which is the foreign exchange rate. Now this against Singapore dollar is 2.6 already, and then with this US dollar is 3.5. So I think even Dato Sri, who always, if there is anyone who can make me feel any better about our government, it will be Dato Sri. It is Jala. But I think even Dato Sri would have a hard time, I think, explaining away the fall of our ringgit.
All right, thanks, Victor.
Thank you.
So the fall of the ringgit, I guess, in exports, whether we can afford to buy our own products, so the high quality products that we have.
When you think about import and exports, the story around exports, when you sell our product abroad, you clearly will get the currency in foreign currency. And if you didn't sell it abroad and you get them, when you convert them into ringgit, you are slightly richer than you were before. And so our products and services will also become a lot more competitive if you are pricing them based on the cost that you produce them. I have no difficulty with people thinking about selling durian in Singapore, Victor, and make a lot more money in doing that. But there will be still opportunity to get very cheap durian from Bentong lah. And they're very, very cheap during the days, the season when it's plentiful. But I think we must find ways to monetize the durian, to sell them. In fact, the government just opened one particular shop, if you like, in Singapore, where the durian are sold at a real premium price. And that is one of the things that we're doing to export our products and services and get more premium for it. And so in return, our farmers, the people who have the orchard, durian orchard, will benefit from it. And so my story is that our currency is very much tied to the international currency. But if you feel only confident about me, Victor, you should feel very confident about Tan Sri Zeti. She is the lady, very, if you like, formidable woman that is holding our fort in the central bank. She has been touted internationally as one of the really safe hands in handling currency. You should feel very confident that we are in safe hands when we get down to figuring out what to do under different sets of circumstances at this time.
All right, well, thank you very much. Andrew, on the line. Hey, Andrew, what do you say?
Hi, Dato Sri. Good evening.
Good evening.
I just want to get straight to the Khazanah Research report recently, where numbers from ETS, Tabung Haji, and PNB shows that we are very, very, very poor, and that contradicts the high-income nation numbers.
So this is the income inequality report?
Yes. Thank you.
Oh. Thank you.
Thanks, Andrew. And I had a look at that report myself, and there were two things that came out clearly in that report. Number one, they did say that we have made a big progress in eradicating absolute poverty. And number two, the inequality in terms of poverty has improved. There's been the stats, whether you believe or not, that's the fact. But when you start looking at the absolute numbers, the study also show we have still a long way to go in dealing with this. Mm-hmm. And so, in fact, I had met with Dato' Sharon, who is the CEO of Khazanah Research Institute. The work that they've done there is they took the data from DOS, Department of Statistics. They didn't do any primary research. They used the existing data. You'd be surprised how much data is available. That was a comment he made. You know, Idris, we did not need to do any primary survey. We use existing data from DOS for that study. And I'm glad that they've done such a study. There are some illuminating points that we need to deal with. One of the things that they mentioned very loud in that report is that affordable housing is a concern. Mm-hmm. So we need to deal with affordable housing, particularly for the middle income and the low income. And so I think we need to figure out, when we do urban public transport, dispersing people out into the suburbs, but we need to connect them into the city via massive mass rapid transit. And I think that will open much more avenue for affordable housing. So that's one of the things that has been introduced. Interestingly enough, the Khazanah report suggests that BRIM is a good thing to do. They suggested that more cash transfers is a better way to move away from fuel subsidy. But of course, that's now moot point because we've now moved out from fuel subsidy. That is, I think, in the penultimate page in that report.
So the as a kind of a short-term solution as we build the foundations for a high-income nation, right?
Correct.
For, with regards to BRIM.
Indeed.
All right, we're talking to Dr. Sri Idris Jalla today. He's taking your questions. We're asking you, are you satisfied with the economic direction of the country? Are you feeling the difference? Is what is being done enough? The number is to call 03-771-09000. You can text us on 016-201-9000. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You're listening to The Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Text, talk, talk back on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. You're on with Caroline and Uma, the last stretch of Talkback Thursday with Dato Sri Idris Jalla, as brought to you by the Economic Transformation Program. And we're asking you whether you're satisfied with the economic direction of the country. Are you feeling the difference brought about by the Economic Transformation Program over the last 4 years? We've got John on the line. Hey, John, what do you say?
Hi, very good evening to you all.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening, Dato Sri. I'm actually working for the company you used to work for.
Shell.
Oh, gosh. You could have said it out louder.
All right, John. What's your question?
It's more about the income disparity in between the various industries within Malaysia. If you look at, oil and gas workers, as you well know, we are paid higher. But what about the other industries? I don't see the same parallels being drawn or amount of effort being drawn to bring up the SMEs. You mentioned earlier about getting our products, high-quality products, out to the greater market and all that. Is there a push? Because there's so much disparity in between industries. Can you imagine an engineer in an oil and gas industry and an engineer in probably the water industry? The skill sets are almost the same. However, the guy in the water industry probably gets paid one quarter of what the oil and gas guy does. But he may be doing the same thing. Similarly, if you look at all the SMEs, we have good products, and yet to get them to market and to get them to be recognized worldwide, I don't see it, that concrete effort being made as such, you see. And more importantly, while Tan Sri Zeti has made very prudent efforts in managing our currency, but you can't help but empathize with the guy is earning 3,000 Malaysian ringgit. And if you go to the States, $3,000 per month could probably set yourself into a good lifestyle. But not here, because the cost of living and the income disparity, I think you understand the point I'm trying to make. So your views. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
Jeffrey.
John.
John, sorry.
Thanks, John. I mean, I do agree with you. There are disparities in terms of income between the various sectors. You're quite right in pointing that oil and gas folks get paid more relative to many others. But what's the path forward? Our view is that although oil palm is a very big sector for us, and if we are predominantly focused on just commodity, then we are not able to increase the salaries of people engaged in that sector. So what did we do in the last 4 years? To encourage more of the oil palm companies to move into the downstream component, manufacturing oleochemicals and etc. and derivatives. And that will give them much greater yield coming out from it, and a lot more work and a lot more salaries to those folks. And the same thing with electrical electronics. For more than 30 years, we have assembly work in E&E in Penang and Kulim in the high-tech park. But I think the strategy that was relatively, I would say, not quite right that we pursued over the last 30 years, that we focus predominantly on assembly work. Now we're telling those companies to do a lot more manufacturing of core component parts. Therefore, the salaries of those people doing that work is higher than just pure assembly. And we're also encouraging them to do research and development. the salaries of the folks involved in R&D is a lot more. So coming back to the point, the existing NKRAs, we are now getting people to shift into higher value migration. That is the strategy that we, although we're still sticking to the same sectors, the 12 sectors, but if you move into what's called the value migration strategy, that will increase the salaries of those folks. Your point about the stress level for those who are below the 3,000 ringgit per month, I agree with you. That's why we put that on the pedestal. That's a challenge for us in government. How do we move this thing forward in the short and medium term? I've covered a lot of that in the earlier chat we had before because the same questions were raised. I will not declare victory today as regards to what we're doing on the in terms of the government with regards to this. But I'm encouraged by the fact that some progress have been made, but still a long way to go.
All right, we've got William on the line. William, what do you say?
Hi. Good evening.
Good evening.
I just want to ask you one thing. The minimum salaries that is now $900 or whatever.
Yeah.
How much of it is weighted down as a result of this large number of foreign workers here for whom the cost of living in this country is so little, yet after 5 years of working, they can buy a piece of land in their home place? Right, the home country, whereas our guys here, basically there's no hope.
All right, thank you, William. Yeah. So is 900 ringgit enough for the Malaysian?
Yeah. The way that the 900 ringgit is pegged, by the way, when we came up with this, we also engaged ILO. So we use the international methodology. The way minimum wage sets, you follow a basket of goods and services that are determined internationally. So it includes food, it includes clothing, it includes shelter, and etc. So those are what is then put there. So when it comes down to food, essentially the methodology requires us to ask, how much do you have to spend to acquire, to buy goods or rather food that will give you the right calorie level so that you don't get malnourished.
Wow.
So
okay.
That's the level that this comes through. So when we did that, it was not a question of whether you're a foreigner or whether you're local. You have to have that money to be able to get that set of calorie required.
To survive.
Yes. So that's why it is called PLI, Poverty Line Index. The poverty line index determined on the basis within which you can get the food required to stay outside the poverty line. And so in Malaysia, of course, the national level, it's just 900 ringgit. But we had some big problem in Sarawak because cost of living is much higher in Sarawak. Mm. But we could not put it at 1,100. And that would have been perhaps the right number for poverty line for Sabah and Sarawak because cost of living is higher. But because the salaries offered by the small and medium enterprises were so low, and if we pegged it at 1,100, many of those small and medium enterprises, right, micro enterprises, would have got out of business.
You would have killed the SMEs.
Indeed. So that's why we had to take a relatively measured approach in moving it forward.
All right. So that's really, we've got a question about from the text messages innovation.
Yes. It says, how do we create a culture of innovation? Is anything being done about it currently?
A couple of things being done. We form a company called Agency Innovation Malaysia. And that company is really trying to work with the private sector in selected places to go and do this. And what the first thing that AIM did was we took 1,500 intellectual property ideas were registered by the local companies and took every single one and re-examined them. And we paid many of them to the private sector to bring them for commercialization. And I'm pleased to say that more than 100 over of those, ideas are now being worked through for commercialization. That's one of the things that's being done. The other thing that has been done with the initiative from AIM is that to introduce higher order thinking skills in some selected classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
So they have gone out to some schools to bring this into the curriculum on a trial basis. And if this work to cause our guys to become more innovative in our thinking process rather than just rote learning, it might become something that we might incorporate into the future. The other thing that's being done by AIM is that I sit on the board, is that companies that have some very radical ideas to move forward, we then really work with them to then bring that forward. And I give the example of Carex, the condom manufacturer. They came to Malaysia, to the government, and said, look, the number one supplier of the most premium condom in the world is Japanese. They have the thinnest condom. But they wanted us to work with them to then put in nano or graphene application into the condom so that we can have them even thinner than hairline. And so if we did that, we will be able to compete with the Japanese and do much better. So we have a big project that we're overseeing with regards to this. There are other things in the application of nano, on lithium ion battery, plastic additives, name it, we've got so many. In fact, we have a company called Kuala Lumpur Medical Center. We are working with them to do a stage 3 trial for stem cell. We believe that Malaysia is now on the avant-garde on stem cell treatment in the world. But they needed money to do the global stage 3 trial. And so they've passed the first stage, second stage trial, but now we're on the third stage trial. But of course, they don't have the money to do it. So the government is funding some of the amount needed to do the global trial for this stem cell. So I think if we did that, I can give you many, many other examples of things happening on the ground. There's another one. There is UKM had come up with an entire DNA sequence so that all the chili paddy can ripen all at the same time. So, yeah, it is true. And so that DNA sequence is fantastic. Syme Dabi had now bought into the IP, so they are working in collaboration with UKM to do this. Can you imagine how much the market will open in Mexico, in many, many other places that consume so much chili.
Much chili, yeah.
And it's very, very easy to harvest too, because they ripen at the same time, the same padas, level 1 and level 2, level 3.
That's so fantastic.
Fantastic. So we got a long list of innovative products that Malaysians are coming up with.
Well, you certainly have, you know, the gift for making everyone feel optimistic. And that ties in with one final question that was sent in to you. You know, it says, Dato' Sri, Malaysia has a weak track record for public accountability. What is it that encourages you to keep on believing, keep on working?
Well, I always want to look at things as half full rather than half empty, Caroline. Mm-hmm. Umar, and I mentioned, some of you may know, that the U.S. government and the U.K. government and the Swedish government and World Bank, they like the work we're doing in Malaysia. So they approached me 2 years ago, why don't we pay Pemandu to help the Tanzanian government?
That's right.
So I've got 23 people working in Tanzania for the last year and a half, helping them to move the pieces forward. And I was encouraged by the fact that those three government plus World Bank, they said what we're doing here is pretty good. But they are not, you know, these guys are not altruistic, they're not utopian. They know the world is a real world. We all come with good, the bad, and ugly. But, you know, there are some good things we're doing. We are far from being the perfect peace. God is so kind to all of us. He made us to be beautifully imperfect. And so we all got issues in Malaysia, but we shall not be discouraged by it. And there are people that tell us, yes, you got issues in Malaysia, but we can see some good things you're doing. In fact, I was invited to speak at Harvard School of Kennedy a month ago. I was giving a lecture at the faculty and the students there. They were very encouraged by the work that's being done here. And I'm not saying that we're perfect, but we got a long way to go. But I think we have some groundswell of good things happening in our country.
Well, keep on fighting the good fight is what we say. That was Dato' Sri Idris Jalla. He's the CEO of Pemandu. He's been joining us on Talkback today and answering your questions. Today's Talkback, of course, is brought to you by the Economic Transformation Programme. Thank you so much for your calls, all of your hundreds and thousands of texts and tweets. We're so sorry we didn't have time to get to all of them. But keep tuning in. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.